Let us pause to reflect on what we've heard read today from Luke's Gospel. It's the story of an innocent man killed on a cross. As a story, it is brutal and callous. Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion of the Christ, graphically portrayed that brutality a couple of years ago. There is violence in what is said and what is done to Jesus. Words and nails are meant to pierce him. Those who know the Bible story are reminded of that persecuted person in Psalm 22 with the metaphoric bulls and lions and dogs circling him, waiting to tear him to pieces. There are dark forces of evil at work in this story, and it is worth our time to reflect on it. I want you to, if you can, sit with the darkness for a little while, to allow yourself to reflect on the evil. Why do I want that? Because it implicates us. The darkness in that story is not just darkness from another time and place. It's not just darkness caused by Herod and Pilate and Romans. It's not darkness that happened just 2,000 years ago. Yes, all of that is true. But it's a darkness that is today's darkness. It's the darkness that's in our hearts, yours and mine, and every other human being. It's the darkness of today's wars and poverty and sickness. It's the darkness of every human being. We need some honesty and humility to sit with this and acknowledge it. I'll try to explain what I mean by looking a little at what happens to Jesus. As he is led away to be crucified, he's followed by a crowd of people, including some women, who are weeping for him. These daughters of Jerusalem, as he calls them, do not appear in any of the other Gospels. I presume they are weeping for the injustice. They know he is an innocent man. They feel it, and their response is to weep. We know he's an innocent man because we've seen already Pilate and Herod say they couldn't find anything guilty about him. But Jesus says to the women, "Don't weep for me." He tells them rather to weep for themselves and for their children. And he prophesies that a terrible time is going to come on Jerusalem. So bad it would be better not to have had children in the first place. And he quotes from the Old Testament prophet Hosea, chapter 10, verse 8, who says to his people at his time, "The future is looking so bad for you, Israel, that you would wish you had never been born. You'd wish the mountains would fall on you and the hills would cover you. There's a time coming that will be so terrible you'd wish you were dead." Why does he prophesy such a grim future? What does Jesus know that these weeping women don't know? Well, as with Hosea, what Jesus is talking about and prophesying about is God's judgment. The same verse from Hosea is used in the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 6, verse 16, to talk about the horror of God's judgment. In that case, God's final judgment. "You would rather the mountains fell on you and the hills covered you than experience God's wrath." A terrible judgment comes on those who reject God, whether it's the nation of Israel back in Hosea's time, whether it's the city of Jerusalem rejecting Jesus, or whether it's anybody, any human being facing God at the end of time. Jesus could so easily be speaking to each of us here today. As moving as it is to sing the songs and to hear the readings, to pray the prayers, he might as easily be saying to us, don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves and your children. Weep for every human being who rejects the kindness and compassion of God shown in Jesus. Weep for everyone who takes God for granted. Weep for everyone who refuses to repent of their darkness, who refuses to humble themselves and seek God's forgiveness. So when Jesus turns and speaks to these women and says, look out for yourself, don't worry about me, what he's actually doing is showing compassion for them. Even at the moment when he's just about to die, he is still deeply moved by the eternal destiny of other human beings. And he's concerned that they know what their future looks like. He spent his public life, after all, being compassionate. When you read the records of the Gospels, you see Jesus healing the sick, feeding the hungry, teaching truth to people so they wouldn't be lost, driving out demons so they wouldn't be controlled by evil, all motivated by his incredible compassion for human beings. You and I know this. If we've been Christians for any length of time, we know Jesus is full of compassion. We've experienced his compassion in our life. We've experienced his mercy and kindness to us. And we know that we do not have to be perfect to be Jesus' friend. His compassion is for each of us again today. He knows the darkness in our hearts. He knows the darkness in our world. He knows that none of us are good enough or clean enough or honest enough. None of us have enough integrity, enough honour. We're not truthful enough. He knows that. And yet he doesn't leave us to face God's judgment alone. He moves forward to the cross because he knows that is the only way to fully and finally deal with the darkness in our hearts, to give us hope that there is something better for us and for the world. Otherwise, we would face God's judgment on our own, and we would rather be dead than do that. The cross shows us how powerless we are. We cannot save ourselves. We're just not that good or that capable. And well may we weep for those who do not believe this. I'm sure there's many an evangelist who has wept tears in his or her prayers before trying to speak the truth about the cross. Eventually, the story moves us to a place of execution, called here in Luke's Gospel the place of the skull, because it sticks out, Golgotha, or in Latin, Calvaria, Calvary. And here Jesus is crucified between two criminals. Amazingly, as he awaits death, his compassion is shown yet again as he prays for his killers, praying, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Isn't that exactly what he has told us to do earlier in the Gospels? To love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. To his death, he lives up to his own standards. Most of the people watching Jesus die completely misunderstand what is happening. Around the cross, we hear hostile, barbarous, sneering voices calling for Jesus to do what? To save himself. The people and the rulers sneered. He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God. The soldiers mocked. If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And even one of the criminals called out, aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. Did you hear that repeated line? Save yourself. Save yourself. Save yourself. It's the final satanic temptation. But Jesus has not come to save himself. Earlier in Luke's gospel, we're told he came to seek and save those who are lost, to lay down his life for those who are enemies of God. And his prayer, Father, forgive them, reminds us of that. The mockers think that if he saves himself, this will somehow prove that he is the Christ, the Son of God, the Chosen One. And it's absolutely the opposite which is true. It is by dying, by enduring the cross, that Jesus shows who he is, that he is God's only Son, obedient unto death. Ironically, it is through his death that he saves not only himself, but every human being who will put their faith in him. It is by his death we are freed. He dies for us and in our place. It is his death that removes the frightening prospect of God's judgment. We no longer need to weep for ourselves when we accept what Jesus has done for us. It is his death that saves. It is the great mystery of the cross. The final voices in the scene, that of the second criminal and the centurion, show us that some people get a glimpse of that. They get a little bit of an understanding. And it may be that's all you have here today. You just have a glimpse that here is an innocent man dying on a cross for me. Well, that's a good start. If you're here today and you're not yet a Christian, then I want you to realize that Christianity is at its core very simple. It's about the teaching, the life, the death and resurrection of Jesus. Christians are people who accept that Jesus died on a cross for them and put their trust in him for the rest of their lives. We live knowing that God is real and that through Jesus he welcomes us into his presence. We know we're not good enough, and that's why we accept what Jesus has done for us. If you'd like to know more about this, you might like to talk to me today or join us for a course in Christianity called Alpha, which starts on April the 17th. And there are some invitations on our table over by the wall over there. Also, I've got a couple of copies of a book called The Case for Easter, which I'm happy to give you. I'll just read you the title of the first chapter. It's titled The Medical Evidence: Was Jesus' Death a Sham and His Resurrection a Hoax? And there are three other chapters and a conclusion. Free to you if you don't quite understand or you don't quite believe or you're not sure. That was written by a journalist who was a skeptic, who when he investigated the basics of the story, it convinced him and he became a Christian. I invited you to sit with the darkness earlier on. It is only through the cross that the darkness in the human soul is dealt with and removed. It's a topic that much of the New Testament reflects on. In Luke's account, we're reminded how Jesus is motivated by love and compassion for human beings. He prays for forgiveness of his enemies and accepts a criminal into his kingdom. It is the cross that provides atonement for sin. He dies in our place as he unjustly bears the penalty for your sin and mine. He does this because he has such deep compassion for us. The response that is called from us is to accept what Jesus has done for you, to acknowledge your debt to him, and trusting in him for the rest of your life, display the compassion, the love, and the forgiveness that he so dramatically displays. The cross shows us bad news. It shows us that every human being carries darkness in them. You and I are not that different to those that mocked Jesus. But the cross also shows us good news. It shows us that every human being can be forgiven and live a life that honours God and displays his compassion and forgiveness to others. So today, as we conclude, let us thank Jesus that he hasn't left us in our darkness, that he hasn't left us to face the frightening prospect of God's judgment on our own, that he hasn't left this world in all its mess and just said, "You made the mess, get on with it." Let us thank Jesus that he hasn't left us in that sort of darkness and mess, but that he has rescued us, and out of his great compassion for us, he has given us hope.